David Crosby has died at the age of 81. He was a legendary singer, songwriter, and two-time Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, inducted as a member of both the iconic folk rock band The Byrds, with whom he first rose to stardom, and the iconic Woodstock era defining group Crosby, Stills, and Nash. We spoke with Crosby in 2016 when he was on tour playing songs from throughout his storied career. For that tour, which had a stop at the Bardavon, he was joined by his son, James Raymond, on piano, and he'd been working with Michael League of Snarky Puppy on a new solo album. We air that interview now, In Memoriam.
There's something very intimate and sweet about this to me, of you and your son going on the road together and looking at various aspects of your career.
You know, it's a magical thing. You know that James was put up for adoption by his mom,
right. And
we didn't meet each other until he was, like, you know, in his late 30s or middle 30s. And so for us to find each other at all and then for us to be friends, because that kind of meetups, they very often go wrong. And ours went right. And for me to be able to make music with him is astounding. He's an incredible musician. I mean, much better than me. And much better player. And so we, you know, as soon as we met, we started playing music with each other. Started a band called CPR for a while. That was really fun. He's been in the band for CSN for a long time. And we write together all the time. There's just nothing in the way. It's like a really clear, empty, wonderful, beautiful street that goes both ways. And so it's a joy. You know, I like doing it differently as much as I can. I don't want to just do the same thing. That got really tiring.
Mm.
And so this is a fresh thing that James and I have always wanted to do and haven't had a chance to. I'm looking forward to it a lot.
Is there some part of this, and maybe I'm reading far too much into this, but is there a part of it where it's also your opportunity to sort of say, for him to share with you his musicality and for you to share with him your musicality?
Yeah, yeah. And it's a big part of our communication. You know, I mean, other people have, the English language and a few other things to communicate with, but we have this music to communicate with, and it really works. We really do talk to each other.
Given the distance for so long, how aware was he of your career and your music?
When we met up, I was thinking he'd be all impressed with me, but no, he's a keyboard player, so he liked Billy Joel and Elton and the other guys who played piano, you know, Stevie Wonder, you know, all these great keyboard players, singers were his heroes, you know, Donald Fagen, you know, those were the guys that he idolized. But when we got together, we found that our chord heads were very similar, and the places we wanted to take melodies were very similar, and the words we wrote were very similar. So,
you mentioned a moment ago about that idea of writing with somebody else, and you writing in a room with him. And I know you also did this for the new album with Michael League.
Mm-hmm.
You enjoy that collaborative process.
I do, and for several reasons. Look, if the amount of songwriting talent you bring to a thing is like a palette, okay, of colors. When you write with somebody else, you've got twice as many colors.
Yeah.
It's that simple. Also, the other guy always thinks of something you didn't think of. Always. Every time. So it widens the possibilities, and it's been my experience that it increased the quality, because the people I write with, man, are completely honest with me. They say, that's almost it. That's almost it. But I don't like this word. And and so we talk to each other very honestly, and that ups the quality. You know, that's the thing that a lot of other writers don't have, is somebody to say, yeah, that's good, but you could do it better. And I could name writers, and I won't, but I could name some writers I know very well who really could use that a lot. Really could use somebody telling them, work a little harder.
In listening to just the first track, the first release off the new album, there's very much a stripped down quality, a very delicate quality to this, which I assume is what you ultimately wanted.
You know, when I started working with Michael, I thought, okay, here's this master craftsman, and he's got a gigantic toolbox, namely Snarky Puppy, a band full of talented musicians, right? So we got together, and he said, no, that's not really what I had in mind. What I had in mind was playing to your strengths, going to acoustic guitar, intricate acoustic guitar that you've thought up, and I had a bunch of it, and vocal stacks, which, of course, I really love to do, and words that mean something. So I said, fine, that is my home ground. That is right in my wheelhouse. I will go happily and heartily on that path. And we did. And there's the record.
When you do something like this, and it has to be incredibly freeing, but does it also allow you to reflect on what you've done before, that you look at it with either any regret or that you wouldn't appreciate it as much now if you didn't go into other musical forms earlier in your career?
Well, you know, I have to, this is kind of a terrible thing to have to admit, but I don't look backwards at all.
Well,
I don't really think about my past music at all. I don't compare this stuff to it. I don't listen to my old stuff very often. Maybe every once in a while a specific song will come to mind that I like. But generally, I'm focused on what I got to do today, what I might be able to do tomorrow, what I would hope to do this week, this month, this year. I don't think about this stuff in terms of its connection to my past music very much. They're little, but very, very little. And I don't look at my past hardly at all. I don't think it's healthy. Because then you get into it like resting on your laurels. And, you know, yes, I'm proud of the work I've done, but it's done. That's then. This is now.
So a bit of a twist on the question. How do you look at the way that we as an audience respond to your body of work with I would say, at least on my part and many others, with great love and reverence?
Well, you know, I know that they like the songs. I mean, again, somebody loving Guinevere doesn't hurt me a bit. I love it. and I love singing it. And I do sing it every night because
right.
I know people want to hear it. But I also sing a bunch of stuff they've never heard. And I do that for me because this thing has to be fun or for me or there's no point in doing it.
Your collaborator on this album, as I mentioned, Michael League, said at one point that you are hunting music, that you were always hunting music.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I discovered Joni Mitchell.
Right.
That would tend to make you want to keep doing that.
And ultimately, do you know what you're hunting for?
Yes. Singer-songwriters and exceptional players. I'm hunting for music. I love singer-songwriters. I find very few of them that I really like, but I have been lucky about it. I did all the harmonies on Jackson Browne's first record because I found him and loved him. I produced Joni Mitchell's first record because I found her and I loved her. Recently, I've found, well, in the interim, in the last few years, I found Sean Colvin. I mean, I didn't discover her, but I found her for myself and loved her. I found Mark Cohen, who I think is just excellent. And recently I've run into a girl named Becca Stevens, who's amazing. A girl named Michelle Willis, who's amazing. I found Snarky Puppy on YouTube, and they just completely blew my mind. I hunt for music because I love it, and I'm always looking to find that new person that sparks me, that's coming up, that needs to be given the light, you know.
You mentioned Jackson Browne, and the new album was recorded at Jackson Browne's studio.
Yeah. He had a very good studio there. I don't know if it's going to keep going, but it's a wonderful studio.
How important is that of where you record?
It's pretty important for two reasons. One, technically, If a place has a great collection of microphones and really good Neve board, for instance, or equipment that you really like, really good like Manly or Neve inputs. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. But the vibe of the place has a tremendous amount to do with it. Big commercial studios have some girl that looks like a lizard behind the desk and a heavy entourage factor. And I don't dig that at all. Yeah. When I go there, I want to work. And so I like it that Jackson's is just one room. You're the only person there. It's a good room.
When you perform this music, is it just you and your son on stage?
Just me and him.
He's on piano and you're on guitar. Does it change night to night or do you have it fairly set?
Oh, it'll change night to night.
And how do you communicate that with each other? How do you go over that and decide
what's going on? We talk about it. You know, we say, you know, could I just stick this one in instead of that one tonight? Because I just feel like singing it. And, you know, he knows all my stuff and I know all his stuff. So yeah. Pretty good.
Obviously, there's much to be made about Crosby, Stills, and Nash and the rift between you and Graham Nash and so forth. I'm less interested in that because that story has been told many times. I am interested, however, in that idea of collaboration on stage versus of off stage. Of can that be just stultifying at some point where it is nice to just be you? I mean, it's your second solo album in just a matter of months, really.
Well, there's a great deal of freedom to it. And there's no none of the psychodrama that surrounds, you know, the big group. It's a joy to do. And I need to be happy to make good music. So it's really working for me really well.
Do you think it's difficult for really any group to have great success and pure happiness?
Yeah, I think it's very difficult. Groups generally, no, I think the Rolling Stones might be the exception that proves the rule. But generally, groups devolve from an exciting thing to something where you turn on the smoke machine and play your hits. Right. And that's not good enough. It's just not. It's fun. It's easy money. It's the path of least resistance. But it's not good enough.
And it's not good for you as a musician. It's
no, because it doesn't make you grow.
Yeah.
If you stop growing, you should, you know, pack up your guitar and go to the retirement home.
Which you have no intention of doing.
Absolutely not.
So from my understanding, after this album comes out, then you go back to working on another album with your son.
Yes. Matter of fact, we now have all the songs for the one with my son, which is going to be called Home Free. And I just wrote a song with Becca Stevens I just wrote one with my son that's really crazy, and then I just wrote one with Becca that's so beautiful it'll make you cry. And we're done. We got all the songs, and now it's just a matter of finishing off the vocals and mixing it.
And you continue to write songs with your son and others?
Yeah. Yeah, I wrote one song on this second record with Michael McDonald that's killer little jazz ballad. It's beautiful. And it's fun how humble I am, isn't it? But it is good. I really think it's going to be a stunner of a record. I think both of these records are about as good as I can do it. And I'm very happy about that.
You know, humble schmumble, but it's lovely to hear you as excited as you are about it.
Oh, man, I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
Look, there's only two things that are really important to me, man. My family and the music. And if the music's going well, I am just a tremendously happy camper. And the music is going about as well as you could hope for it to go.
David Crosby speaking with us in 2016. He did join us again in 2018 in advance of a David Crosby and Friends concert at Tanglewood.
Do you feel as though this great work that you're doing now, this output, is the culmination of a lifetime of experience? In the sense of, a lot of artists will look and say, okay, well, I had my greatest success when I was younger, and maybe that was some of my best work, but you're putting out this incredible stuff that yes, all of life's lessons has brought you to this point.
Yeah, and one of those lessons is don't
sit there and look at your past and you know, say, wow, I was so significant. You know, that's just bullshit. What counts is what you do today, right now. You know, and I am busily stirring around trying to do good, significant work today, right now.
Are you and have you ever been impacted by the culture around you, of what is happening in the world as a response?
Sure, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm completely aware of the world around me, or I try to be constantly, and I am affected by it. I try to select what I'm affected by the most. Okay, that sounds funny, but it's true. I do try to be affected most by acts of exemplary humanity from other decent human beings that I really admire. You know, the way you are inspired by Martin Luther King, or the way I'm inspired by Muhammad Ali, who I think is one of my main heroes. The way I'm inspired by the kids who are doing the March for Our Lives,
right.
David Hogg and these kids, I love them. The way I was inspired by the Women's March, man. That Women's March made the hackles on the back of my neck stand up. I couldn't believe it. I was so thrilled. When I see that, I want to be them. I want to be with them. I want to be like them. I want to be like the people who are trying hard to be decent human beings. They inspire me.
David Crosby, speaking with me in 2018. The American music great died this week at the age of 81. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.